Greetings, fellow music lovers. In this latest instalment of The Jukebox Graduate, Dave and Eugene managed to ramble on for well over 3 hours. Many efforts were made to edit this down to a much more reasonable length, but it was simply not possible. Therefore, what you are about to hear is part one of a very special two-part podcast presentation of The Jukebox Graduate. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Micah Nelson's brain. I live inside of Micah Nelson's head, which is sometimes attached to his neck. And when I'm not indulging in my obsession with rendering sounds and pictures together to distract me from the overwhelming onslaught of the dystopian, nightmarish hellscape known as the 21st century, bombarding my every cell with existential dread and sending me into a panic attack, I'm listening to The Jukebox Graduate. And I love you very much.
Hey, everyone. This is Dave Rayburn.
And I suppose that makes me Eugene Edwards.
Yeah, I suppose it does. And and we are Jukebox Graduates. And this is The Jukebox Graduate, the first podcast episode we've done in quite some time.
And was it spring of 2020?
It was around. Yeah, it was 2020, I believe. And okay. A lot's happened since then. First of all, I'm in Riverside, California. But where the heck am I grabbing you from?
I am in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Oh,
yeah,
fancy.
Yeah. And I'm starting. I'm the more I think about it, I'm more concerned about third graders learning about Florida in school.
Can we ban those books?
Let's try it. We're doing these shows around this general Florida area, but we're hubbing out of West Palm Beach. We played in Clearwater last night, sharing the bill with Charlie Crockett. I didn't get to catch his set last night. I don't know if I'll get to see him tonight either, but I did meet him at an after party. It was after Willie's birthday bash at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And he was a very sweet guy and a great sport, because I don't know why, but early in our conversation, it was just established that I would just be Don Rickles. And I just lambasted this poor kid for like a straight hour, just relentlessly. And he
did you use the phrase hockey puck at all?
Oh, believe me. And what a great sport! So we're happy to do shows with him. And
that's cool.
So that's where I am. That's what's up.
All right. So you're still doing the Dwight touring thing, but you've been doing some other things on the side as well.
Well, I try to stay busy. Obviously, I mean, I try to stay very, very busy. With Dwight, we reduced the amount of shows per year this year in particular. I mean, we used to do 125, 120, at right. least 100, and we did more, you know, closer to 80 this year. And but there will be a new album out next year.
Oh, really?
Probably an increase of dates, I'd assume. Anyway. So the Dwight shows, I never even use the word tour. We go out for a weekend,
right.
and come straight back. Right. So I'm never away from home for too long. And so, but when we are back home in Los Angeles, of course, Dwight has his Sirius XM channel. Mm-hmm. It's channel 349 right now. The Bakersfield Beat, and he has a show called The Greater Bakersfield. And I don't even know if I ever spoke about this when we had our podcast going. So over the years, so he'll have a guest come on, and they'll chat for any length of time, really. And then when they're done talking, the band, we come in with acoustic instruments, with fiddles and banjos and mandolins and accordion, whatever we got laying around. And we just perform live with the guests. We just pick an old Merle song that we all know together, or we'll pick something from their catalog. Or generally, we'll just listen to the conversation that Dwight and the guests have been having.
Right.
And you'll hear songs come up in conversation.
You'll know what you're going to go into. Well,
we have a guess. Sometimes if they're really talking about a song in particular, you kind of get a feeling. I was like, I think we're going to attempt this one. So that I'm writing out chord charts or what have you really quickly.
Wow.
People are furiously printing lyrics. I get it. We just taped something, and I'm assuming it'll air by the time this airs, with Michelle Phillips.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah. So, great story, just great stories. And but we've done it with Post Malone and Beck and Jacob Dylan and Bob Johnny Weir. Rivers yeah. and Bob Weir. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, honestly, I hate to say it, but it's embarrassing. I may have, by now, I've kind of forgotten some. I was like, oh my God, you know, which was great. When I got the Dwight gig, you know, it was to play guitar. Mm-hmm. Do a bunch of concerts, the occasional TV spot. And he uses the band, he uses us in the studio, but I didn't know that there would also be this opportunity
right.
to hang out and play with Dave Alvin or, Emmylou Harris, like, you know, just, and in such a casual setting. So, it, you know, he's full of surprises and they're always pleasant surprises.
What right? a bonus.
And then also he's for his channel, he created a show. Well, he just came up with a name, From Cowpunks to Now Punks, and then had Mitch Marine, our drummer, a fellow named Bill Bentley, who's a music writer and then eventually a music executive at Warner Brothers. Actually, you see him in the Wilco, the I'm Trying to Break Your Heart movie, because he was still head of publicity at Warner Brothers at that time, and he's in the movie. You'll see Bill. And so the three of us we host this show. First, we just established what was or is cowpunk, that style of music, and then we play a bunch of records, and we're starting to book more guests, mm-hmm. which is great. So you know, busy rounding up guests for that. Oh my God, Dave, I got in touch with a guy named David Pahoa, who played bass for the Plimsolls, and you know, someone got us in touch with each other. We played phone tag for a bit. I had like a 2-hour conversation with him one night. Just a fabulous guy.
Wow.
Just telling the greatest stories. And we're really excited because the whole thing was in preparation to have him as a guest on the show. And he was talking about Peter Case, who lives up in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. He said, well, let me get a hold of Peter. And I know he's going to be coming to Los Angeles soon. So let's just do it with the two of us come in. I'm thinking, this is great because right. David's now bringing Peter along. And you know, I let the weekend go by and I didn't hear from David. So then I followed up the next week and didn't hear back from him. And he passed away like 3 or 4 days after we were on the phone. So bizarre. I didn't get him on the show, but I got to talk to the guy and he had some great, great stories about the scene at that time. So yeah, it's pretty nuts. So anyway, so I've got that. And of course my know-it-all hour, here on Jukebox Graduate Radio, which, you know, I was telling a mutual friend of ours the other night that when I came up on the 50th one, I kind of thought, maybe this is enough. Maybe no, I got some more tunes I want to play. Then I came up to the 75th episode. maybe this is a good time. And it was got to the 100th. This is a big round number.
Yeah.
I should probably wrap it up now. But I thought of another story, or I thought of one more thing. So I guess I'll just keep doing this and you apparently won't fire me. So, in fact, when we're done with this conversation here, I will start making the next episode from right here in my hotel room.
And you know, it's the biggest draw on the station. And you're getting people coming up to you after shows.
Yeah,
saying that they listen as well in different cities. It's so great to hear. And I see people through the station listening all over the world. You know, it's heavy on the West Coast, a little bit on the East Coast, stuff out of the country. It's just cool that people are tuning in to hear it live on the station. And additionally, we have an archive over at Mixcloud that has, I believe, just about all of your shows on there. Not all of them. There's some older ones we still need to get back up there at some point, and we will. But yeah, you're coming up on what, episode 109 now?
That sounds about right.
I was thinking around 100. It's like, you know, I may be getting a call from Gene at one point, just saying, well,
yeah,
but
right?
But you know, like you said, you know, there's this new stories that you want to share, and you, I mean, I experience this too. I'm learning. You know, I'm in my 50s now, and I'm still learning about music, stuff that excites me at this age, when I've felt like I probably heard all I needed to hear or everything I, you know, could possibly have heard. But I'm still discovering artists. I'm discovering
perfectly put. I mean, for me, what has happened? I mean, when you first pitched the idea to me, you said, "Hey, I'm making a station, and I want you to do a show, just an hour. Do whatever you want." You just said, "Do whatever you want for an hour."
Yeah.
Now, of course, at the time, I guess it was during pandemic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll be honest, my wife and I were separate, going through a separation at the time. And, I needed to be distracted, but of course you want a healthy distraction, right?
Right.
And so that was such a great, offer that you made. And I was excited there were so many songs, just old records that I have a great passion for pardon the preposition. And I thought, well, this would be great to, you know, and that for the very first episode, I remember just kind of looking at that. I think I'm done. these are records I'm so into. And after a few episodes, I thought, I had that feeling, maybe I don't have that much of a library of tunes to play. But then what happens is, especially once the quarantine was lifted by 2022, I guess I started going out more when I was, you know, in LA. Right. I'd go out to the clubs and just seeing new artists or seeing old friends, playing again. And that really, started to inform the show. Or
definitely, definitely.
To be honest, I'll be listening to a radio station or a satellite station, and I'll hear a new artist, and I'm, you know, just Shazam it or whatever. What is this? Who is this? And that'll make its way on the show.
Yeah. One thing I noticed is that in the last year and a half or so, you've been playing a lot more artists you've been discovering, or localized artists here in the LA area when you're back home and you're able to go out and see some live music locally.
Yeah.
You're playing local artists, which is that's a fantastic way to spread that love, you know, because establishing artists are having a hard time getting noticed anyway. So to have somebody actually with a program focused on putting good music into the ears of the people that want to hear, you know, the new and exciting stuff, you're giving them something new and fresh and that they won't find anywhere else likely.
And, well, that's just it. We obviously it's, radio has changed.
Yeah.
Purchasing music has changed. Finding music has changed, but I'm not so much for the worse. It's just so much more diverse the way we learn. So why not an internet radio show by a loudmouth guitar player? I mean, why not?
And by the way, you may want to consider renaming the show, because the Know It All Hour, I don't think you've ever nailed a show in 60 minutes or less. It's pretty much the hour and a quarter, the Know It All Hour and a quarter, hour and a half.
inspired, I think the old Comedy Central back in the 90s had a show. It was called the Half Hour Comedy Hour.
I do recall hearing that. Yeah.
And so, hour is really just an idea.
It's just it's a goal. But you always exceed your goals.
my godfather used to say, "Mañana doesn't mean tomorrow; it means not today." Each show is, I kind of think of it as a little bit of a journal. Sometimes,
yeah, it is.
And it won't, not exactly the exact week I make it, because sometimes things will kind of back up a little bit.
Yeah, right.
But I'm likely to put a Charlie Crockett tune on this week's show because he's on. We're doing these shows together. I'm in Florida, so maybe it'll be something inspired by Florida. I don't know. But I think even when we originally talked about the show, I think the idea was to mix in new stuff with old stuff. Mm. And the idea was just to present things that I think are worth hearing and then hearing about. If I can think of, you know, a song with an interesting story behind it, or an artist with interesting.
You occasionally put together some threads of related topics, subject matter as well, which is nice.
Yeah, I try not to do that too often.
Well, no, but yeah, you don't overplay it for sure. But the big grab on your show is the deep dives that you pull from various sources, where you spend 5 minutes or more talking about a specific artist. And you're getting these from great, great sources as well. And then you follow up with a tune that really, that's like the 1-2 punch. And you do two of those every show. And they're fabulous. I gotta say, I've learned a lot.
Thank you. I think I got a note from somebody about a month ago who's been a big supporter and a fan for a long time. And it was a complaint about the show.
Just pass it on to me.
I don't think I've ever had. Most people just don't listen, but this he could. But Kevin decided to listen, and then you know. But as a complaint, it was note. He would like so much more of the hour to be that, like all, like more deep dives, more of the information, more of the talking, please. And I was just like,
that's funny because I had mentioned to you like, hey, we should do something for your birthday. We should like all day on your birthday, we should do some like all Eugene all day kind of thing. Like, so I said to you, what do you think about an all day randomization of all your deep dives from, you know, the 100+ episodes? And you're like, even I think that's too much of me.
honestly, oh my God.
It's just such a great source of information. I mean, I've learned a lot through so many of them. And in fact, later on, as we go through our pledge drive information, that's that time of the year for the first time ever.
I thought you just called me because you cared. This is awkward.
No, but I am going to talk about some of the shows that we've had on the station, including yours. And I'm going to play some bits from some of them, the hosted ones. Oh. And there's one in particular that stands out from your show that I'm going to play the full deep dive part later on. And it's powerful. And it's just one of the things that I love listening to your show for. So, but that and the diverse selection of music that you pull in, whether it's deep album cuts from, you know, like the Faces or, you know, or some artist you just discovered 2 weeks ago in LA at a club that you were going to see somebody else play at or something, you know, it's just all these different corners. It's just fantastic.
Oh, but that's the thing. I mean, I'm so inspired going out to at least in Los Angeles. If I go to Hotel Cafe, I used to go to Desert Five Spot, there's clubs in LA and there's so much really, really wonderful talent out there. It's just some great singers, some great songwriters, some really kick-ass bands out there. It gives me hope, you know? And I remember once I went to my local pub in Highland Park called the York, and to see some friends play. And it was kind of they did like an early evening, low volume. They just kind of play softly over some tunes. Really, really great material. And guys that have, a lot of these they have national level gigs. They're sidemen, but then they get together. All right. And then they had this young woman come up, and she grabbed a Telecaster and she did one of her songs, and she blew me away. I was like, "Who is this?" And it's I'm getting the last name wrong. I played on. Is it Margaret Gladsby? Margaret Gladsby. Now I hear her on the radio. I hear her on the Spectrum. On KC's. I mean, I hear. And it was sort of like I had no idea who this person was, and it's sort of nice to say, oh, other music people clearly know who she is.
Well, you know, everyone needs a gateway, and the live experience was your gateway to this artist, and you know your show can be a gateway to a lot of listeners for new material as well, and that's the beauty of radio when presented.
I'm so romantic about radio. You know, the other thing I like to throw in on a show and every now, just like track 4 from side 1 on any given Beatle album, like an early Beatle album. Yeah. It wasn't a single. And just to sprinkle in a simple, you know, When I Get Home or you know, something like You Won't See Me off Rubber Soul. Because even there were just, it just kind of shows how good that band was. The compositions are simple. Obviously catchy. The production had care. And I love just sprinkling in. I mean, of course, I assume I played Hey Jude on one episode. Maybe not. I don't know. You know, the big ones, you know. Yeah. Aside from playing, you know, Penny Lane or Strawberry Fields, or just to grab something off of, like I said, you know, track 3 on side 2 of like one of the albums from 65 or 66, just in the mix of all this other new stuff and other old stuff, and like, man, it just sparkles. You know?
What a great idea, though, for a subject of a show. Side one, track four, and just see how many, see if it holds up with other artists. You know, is that the hot spot for Led Zeppelin or for, whoever else?
Hey, did you see Dave, speaking of Zeppelin, they identified the man.
Yes, the guy.
On the cover of Zeppelin 4. Yeah. Like
that's fantastic.
A roofer, like a thatch roofer.
He's not around anymore, but.
No.
He's long gone, but.
1880.
But they identified him. Yeah, that is.
I think that's really hip.
That's fascinating stuff. I love that, even though it's not necessarily music related, but it's tied in with the pop culture of the artwork and everything. You've seen that forever. He's got a name, you know.
It's not a big deep dive, but maybe that'll be a feature this week.
Okay. Now, one other thing that they haven't spoken of yet that you've been doing in recent, in the last year or two, I know you did some stuff with Fender, but then that kind of morphed into you and a gentleman named Dylan. Tell us
about that.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, what happened was, fortunately, I was so lucky. I had been doing work with Fender probably starting around 2018. I would do a promotional video for them and was involved in designing a preset for some of their gear, and it was very flattering. And then they had a live stream, kind of a talk show that was to promote their online learning platform called Fender Play. And I was a guest, and then I was a guest host. And December of 2019, the producer was saying, we would love to have you be a guest host once a month if your travel schedule allows for it. And he says, you book whoever you want, pick a topic you want, just have, which I thought, wow, that's so exciting. And we had plans to do that going into 2020. And of course the pandemic happened. And now it was like, well, I just thought they were just not going to do the show at all. But happily they said, actually, no, we're going to continue doing the show. We're going to figure out how to do it on, we settled on Zoom, I suppose. And we're just going to have you hosted every Wednesday. It gave me something to do. I got to do a lot of work on the house that I've been, meaning to do it for years, but never had time. But at least I knew when Wednesday was rolling around. Otherwise I had no gauge of time.
Yeah, exactly.
But then met all this great new talent. And, I called old buddies that lived across the United States. And I said, you got to do the show, 'cause I know you're not on the road. You have no excuse not to do it. And then they had me researching for episodes and writing scripts. And then eventually we got back into the studio. We got to do it in person. And Dylan, Dr. Dylan Caligiuri, he just kind of came with the show. He had already been doing a lot of work with Fender. And we sort of just involved him in. He would pop in at the very end to do a quick promo or something.
Right, I remember, yeah.
But then we just kind of kept him on, kept him in a little corner tile. Just stay there. Just don't go, And then we just developed it really into being more of a two-man show. And it was funny because similar to you and I, actually, after a show, we would wrap it up. And then on the drive home, he and I would go over it and talk about, what went well, what didn't go well, ideas for future episodes and how to tweak the thing. So, we just got along so well. And then unfortunately, they just had to end the show. Guitar sales in general went down.
Right.
Fender was having some financial problems. They had big layoffs, and our show was just a consequence of all that.
Yeah.
And it cost a little, per show, especially because they decked out this whole studio for us. And then it turns out, oh boy, we need to cut corners. But the thing is, there was such a strong online community already for the platform, and then there were just true fans of the show
and the pairing of you guys, right? Yeah, so there's a draw.
Yeah, and we weren't given an opportunity to say goodbye to the audience. There was no sign off, nothing. So we noticed online, and particularly in the Fender Facebook community, there was a lot of just head scratching. You know, where are these? And that felt awkward to watch them be confused.
And you couldn't say anything.
Yeah. So we decided instead of saying anything and doing that, we just thought, let's just. And we fought like crazy to get the show back, by the way.
Like, we we really, really did everything we could. And to, you know, to no avail. And then we thought, well, maybe we could just, I don't know, set up a camera and do, and just, we'll just do it ourselves. We'll just do, you know, we tried to find other sponsors, other hosts and stuff. And it was such a, it just, we were losing time. And so we said, you know, let's just do it. And even if just a few people watch it, we have the momentum of it happening.
Right.
And then hope, and then if things turn around for Fender and they want to return to it, at least we kind of, we kept our chops up.
You know? Right.
So that's, so every Wednesday at 5 o'clock, same time, same time and day as the old Fender show was, we just set up cameras and just chat and play and hopefully teach a little bit. Now we're also currently doing an online, workshop for developing guitar players, on an app called Till, which is short for Today I Learned.
Okay.
And so people do have to pay for that, but it's like interactive lessons with the two of us, so to speak. So we're using the YouTube show, the Eugene and Dylan Guitar Show, as a bit of a promo for that, a bit of a teaser. And then by 5:30, we switch over to the pay format. So we're just trying to stay relevant. And, but yeah, sorry, thank you for mentioning that. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's just one of the many things that you've been keeping busy with. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mention them all. And it's hard to believe that you're able to fit all that stuff into, like, your schedule. But you do it. That's the coffee. Coffee doing its job.
And also, you know, my daughter, she just turned 16 a week ago or so.
Great.
So, which is, and so, you know, when they get to that age, I'm just not scrambling around as much as I used to on her. Like, this. She's very focused with her school, and she doesn't have tons of extracurricular activities anymore because she doesn't have time for it. Mm-hmm. So then now, I'm a glorified driver, but it's but it's a little easier for me to schedule, you know, these things. Yeah, you know, still got to make that to-do list and make sense of it all.
But. Now, didn't she design your logo for the two guys with guitars? The original name of the show, was that true?
Yeah, that's true. I forgot. Yeah, the original name was Two Guys with Guitars. And I had this idea of, you know, just like the men's room logo,
right?
Like that white male figure over the blue. And I thought, what if it was? And so I sort of like made a rough sketch of it, like it's that figure, but with a guitar on each guy. And God, I don't even. She used a Google app of some sort. Oh, that's easy. She just did it in a couple of minutes. And I thought, that would have taken me forever. But then actually it was a Fender executive was talking to Dylan about the YouTube show. And she said, she goes, well, you know, the hook is the two of you. You should put your names in the show.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh yeah, that's probably smarter, isn't it? So now it's the Eugene and Dylan Guitar Show. It was one of those things where we phone call after phone call and a Google Doc after Google Doc of possible show names, right? And at some point I thought, I'd rather not get cute. I'd rather just call it what it is. I'd much prefer just calling it what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
We Know It All Hour. I think that was... I still don't remember if it was a joke, but it was that first phone conversation.
No joke.
Told me to do the show. I just said it. I said, well, it's clearly going to be called the Know It All Hour. And there was no other, there's no plan B, you know?
Oh, that's a good name for a show too.
There's no plan B. Yeah. We just play B sides.
Oh my God. Yeah. That, oh wow. That would be, what's a B side, kids say today? What's the B side of a digital file?
Good point.
Yeah. So you've certainly been keeping busy. What have I been doing? Not nearly as much. I'm a schlub. Well, I've got my 9 to 5.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you're chained to the desk there from 9 to 5.
I pretty much am. But I have been doing a heck of a lot of expansion and curating on the Jukebox Graduate Radio. We'll get into all the details of where we've gone, where we started and where we've gone, when we come back from the first break, or somewhere around maybe the second or third break, but beyond working on the station a lot on the sidelines, there's a lot of stuff you don't even know about, but I'll hip you to all that stuff. But beyond that, and this is perfect, I got a jukebox earlier this year. I don't know if I've graduated yet as being a jukebox graduate, because the thing needs some clutch work, but so it's not fully functional at the moment, but man, it's beautiful. I got a Seeberg LS2 Gem from around 1968, 69, and I'm having a lot of fun curating a 45 playlist as far as what's
what,
because you can only, it holds 80 discs.
Yeah.
So I'm splitting it with Shell. She's going to pick 40. I'm going to pick 40.
By the way, do you know, that's why we still refer, well, top 40, because before your model of jukebox, the average jukebox.
Oh yeah. They're limited. 40, yeah. Right.
40 records at a time. So that's why. It was
okay.
The top 40.
I've never really thought about that.
They kept it to 40 because that was because of the technology. Again, the technology dictates so much of the industry and the music itself more than we care to mention or give credit to, you know?
But
my question, Dave, is, are you going to arm wrestle Shell over like who gets, what's going to be A1 on the jukebox?
I don't think she has a strong conviction to dominate any particular selection. But I think the way I guess I'm just going to make the first 40 selections my half and the second 40 her half. And then
she has 41 to 80.
Yeah. 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 So
you're going to agonize over what's going
to
be.
Well, I'm already agonizing just trying to collect these discs one by one to put, just even get them in the machine, because some are a little price. There's like an X45 that I want. That's a Blue Spark. And that thing is like $30 to $100, depending on where you can. And then the condition, I want it to be in very good playable condition. Yeah. It's a struggle just to, I struggled for a while to come up with my Excel grid of what 45s I wanted that did exist that had the big hole, cause that's a thing too. Otherwise, if it has the tiny hole, like you would see on
it's got it physically.
Yeah. Work. Yeah. Well, like some of the British 45s that had come out 7 inches would have, like even the Apple UK 45s would have the tiny hole. So I got to make sure it's either got that knockout center or it's already got the big center. So there's a lot going into it. And then, it's a matter of tracking them all down and all this and that. So meanwhile,
I love
the process. It's kind of like record shopping. Just when you think I've got all the records I want. You find stuff in the wild. You browse, you learn stuff.
We talked about this on the show. Now I have embraced the digital, just buying songs and downloading them and having on your phone I've embraced it because it lessens the clutter of the physical collection of my life. I'm happy with it. I'm thrilled for you that you, because yes, you enjoy the hunt even more than the treasure itself.
It's true. So just expanding the station, and we'll talk about that later. Then I got the jukebox, and let's see what else. Additionally, what I was doing during my summer vacation for the last 2-3 years, whatever it's been. There were obviously during the pandemic period, a lot of people were doing remote kind of stuff. Whether it was like songwriting or recording, things like that. So Bob Schneider, one of my favorite Austin, Texas musicians, singer, songwriters, he had a song called 40 Dogs that he had re-recorded as a bluegrass version. And he asked his fans to submit videos of what they're doing to pass the time. So you'd see like families playing, checkers at the table or, diving off the diving board into the pool. Well, I sent in a video and it made the cut. So if you watch the 40 Dogs video by Bob Schneider, the bluegrass version, you'll see me painting my house on the inside.
Painting your house?
Painting my house. We're painting the interior during the time off.
I did that too. And I didn't think to make a video of it.
Next time.
I repainted I remember because I had to take down the old wallpaper. But of course, this is when I was doing the Fender show from the living room. I had a very limited, a very strict. And I think what I did was it took forever to get that wallpaper off. And then I prepped, primed, and painted just the wall that was behind me for the show. I got that one done. I just had that one segment done first.
Nice.
This is kind of those, you know, wacky pandemic
part two
situations. Yeah.
Well, the other one that I was part of, which is really cool, and we're going to play a track from it. It's this group that was put together on Facebook called the COVID-19 Musicians Recording Collaboration. And they had originally done...
Catchy name.
Yeah, it just rolls off the tongue. They originally did a song, a recording, and a video to accompany it of It's the End of the World as We Know It by R.E.M. Because obviously, you know, the pandemic, and it's like, oh, is this the end? You know, whatever, sarcastically. But they put this track together. A lot of great musicians put that together. Tons of views. They decided to do a second one, and I jumped in on that round and recruited a couple people. It included Eddie Ashworth, who's done some work with Sublime, Michael Simmons, Sparkle Jets UK. And then I got Ted Russell Camp to come on board. And you guys may know Ted from playing with Shooter's Band and Tanya Tucker and whatnot. He actually plays, he doesn't play bass on it and he doesn't sing on it. He plays trumpet and trombone.
Oh, great.
And we got video of it too. He's in the video playing all this. It's a great, great bit.
I think the last in-person podcast we did for our show, I think Lee Pardini was a guest, and we recorded it
at the Den.
At studio, at the Den.
At
yeah.
The Den. Yeah, so we got Ted on this one, and it was fantastic. He had a lot of fun with it. And then I had, you see me in the video, and I've got my pandemic beard and long hair going because I let that go because who cares at that point. And the song we did was,
The people who do see you day in and day out? Michelle care?
She didn't care.
I could name one person
she didn't see. Care. She didn't see the drastic change all of a sudden. She saw it over time, so it was less shocking.
All right. Okay.
But everyone else will be shocked and they'll run screaming to the hills. But so you see a bearded Dave taking part in What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding. And they sent us the basic tracks for it. And everyone kind of put on their little parts, what they wanted to. We'd sing different parts. So that's a lot of fun. But I kind of vamped at the end of it. I was just sort of feeling, Will the Wolf Survive by Los Lobos. It just kind of fit. So I started singing that line at the tail end and just thinking,
G major to C major. It's essentially the same move. Yeah.
It made the cut. I was pretty pleased to see that get worked in there. So, there's a video for that on YouTube. It's got close to 8,000 views, which is kind of interesting for me. But let's go ahead and end this segment now, cause we've gone on for far too long. Let's just hear that track, shall we? Here's What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding by the COVID-19 Musicians Recording Collaboration.
Darkness and sanity. I ask myself.
right. Well, that was fun. And if you want to see the accompanying video, just head on over to YouTube and you can find it. And be on the lookout for Ted Russell Camp and his horn section. It's fantastic.
I could actually hear your beard on that.
Could you? I got too close to the mic. God. The windscreen, you know.
A weird rustling sound.
Speaking of rustling, hey, have you heard the new Beatles track?
Yeah.
Or rather, have you heard the new version of John Lennon's demo from 1977? Right. Or as some people say, have you heard the new Julian Lennon song?
Okay, that's exactly. Okay. I wasn't like, you know, watching the clock and you know, with bated breath, you know, excited to hear it necessarily. Now, I don't mean to take it away from, there's a lot of people, especially a lot of young people for whom this record means a lot. There's a lot of videos on TikTok of young people and they're just in tears hearing because they have never been through the release of for what we call a new Beatles song. Mm-hmm. They weren't alive when Free as a Bird and Real Love came out with the anthology in the 90s. I mean, they weren't even there for that. So this is, right. I get it. And, you know, what's interesting to me. So obviously, I mean, I'm assuming you, Dave, had a copy of John's original demo.
Yeah.
Okay. So you and I are familiar with that original tape and, with the TVs on in the background, I think, if I remember correctly. And, where do I start?
Let's start in the middle.
Yeah. Well,
work our way out.
Unfortunately, they changed the chorus.
They did. There's like a whole section missing.
The original chorus is much darker. And so that was I had a problem with that because that's where harmonically the song gets a little more interesting. But of course, now that's gone. I was a little surprised. I could have used a little more of Paul currently singing a strong two-part harmony with John. It was strange. I was like, well, if this is the last time you get to do something like this, Paul, it was a weird thing where Paul did not assert himself vocally.
Yeah, it's a pretty weak harmony, and they did use those vocals from Because.
And I think a little bit here, there, and everywhere. I think this is
right.
Old Beatle vocals, I guess, which is the only way you get John, Paul, and George doing three-part harmony. Yeah. You know, I get it. It's a workaround. Still wildly impressed with Peter Jackson's technology that's able to extract the audio so well, which, you know, we would have to do a whole other episode on the Get Back documentary.
Sure.
The Peter Jackson, the long one. It's, you know, I don't find myself yearning to hear. I got in the car, I turned the radio on, and I think the Beatles channel, I came in halfway through it or somewhere to it, and I honestly just thought I thought for a minute it was a Julian Lennon track from, it's nostalgic, it's bittersweet. It's really not about hearing quote unquote new Beatles music.
It's a different experience. It's proposed as a novelty in a way. I mean, not that the Beatles should pursue a novelty product in the realm of music anyway. But it's exactly what Free as a Bird and Real Love was for Anthology. And at least then three of the four were actively, you know, they were alive. They were putting the work down on John's tape. This one was a little trickier because George was gone and they had to use what they had that George had put down and try to just think of other ways to piece it together. But yeah, Peter Jackson's technology to clean and isolate that vocal from the piano, which the piano was just kind of overbearing. So to have it completely separated.
Yeah, Paul replays the piano.
Yeah, right. But they were able to lift the vocal cleanly.
That's great.
And then Paul redid the piano and then there was, you know, nobody really knows what was done. You know, they say what they say was done, but some people suspect there was other work done within there. That maybe an AI mod was used to enhance John's voice a little bit to make it a little more Johnish.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, you've got a goal. You have a goal. The idea, and you have all this incredible technology at your disposal now.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you use it? By the way, here's the thing. If because I really adored the Love album.
Yeah.
The music that from the Cirque du Soleil thing. Like I was so moved by it and so touched, and all the choices were just fantastic, right? If I liked that, which is a hodgepodge of Beatle records overlaid on each other, and things are subtracted, things are added, and things are out of place, and I really love that, then I cannot, to be intellectually honest, I can't denigrate this. If I like that, I've got to somehow embrace this song.
So
it's cracked.
So if there, because I have seen, you know, obviously I've read a lot of discussions online about it, and people are speculating what was done. So they obviously extracted John's vocal from the tape. But there are some people that suggest that they used a John Lennon training model in artificial intelligence you may have seen these videos online where people take, like, for example, they could take like an Elton John song and apply a John Lennon vocal model to it. And then you've got John Lennon singing over the Elton John track, replacing Elton's voice, that sort of thing. Some people suggest that they may have actually used a John Lennon training model to help make John's voice sound more John, or at least sound cleaner, even though it's the,
sure,
you know. So if that's the case, then, and you and I agree that Paul's harmony vocal today isn't as strong as we were hoping or should have been, there are a ton of great examples of the Paul McCartney voice model from the 60s being applied to all kinds of stuff, including tracks from his one of his recent albums. If you listen to like the original track from what's that Egypt album that he put out, I forget the name of it entirely, but you listen to one of those tracks on there, the song, he's still a great songwriter, right? But you hear his aged voice and you're like, okay, it's, you know, it is what it is. But I've seen some of those tracks with the young Paul voice applied to it. Oh my God. That's what they should have or could have done with Paul's voice on this, if they did dare do it with John's voice to make it a little more real.
If they were doing that, well, but maybe it was a matter of,
I mean, why not make have John sing from 1977, have 1977 John sing with, say, 1977 Paul?
You know, good question. That's the thing. There's just so many choices now. There's so many choices.
There's
so many options. And, how does it make you feel? How are people feeling? Because I haven't read anything. How are people feeling if it is an AI, you know, beefed up John, an artificially, I wouldn't call it artificial. It's still based on John's data. I don't know.
Yeah. It's,
I mean, would you rather that? Or, hey, Lynn, you know how many Beatle tribute acts are out there, and there's guys just singing spot on John.
Right. Right.
Like, completely learn how to impersonate the guy.
Yeah.
What if they brought one of those guys in anonymously?
Yeah. So I think what it comes down to, as far as how people feel about it, I think it's an issue of transparency. If everyone can be honest about what's happening, you know, like we used something synthesized here or something enhanced here or something artificially created here, at least be upfront about it. So I think for the most part they were, Peter Jackson did a 10-minute documentary on the making of this track. So they, at least they were saying, hey, this isn't some lost Beatles song out of nowhere. Which, yeah, I'm sure bootleggers can now create that on their own with given technology, you know. But at least they were upfront for the most part about everything. But there's still, like I said, in some discussions, people are saying, "No, I think they did a little bit more than they're saying." Whatever, you know. It's to me, it is kind of a little bit of a novelty track, so I'm not like putting all my heart on it.
Consider it a novelty track and just be grateful.
Yeah, I'm glad to have it.
Yeah, there could be a thing where they just, would you rather have heard that they were thinking about doing it and abandon the idea? Imagine the tears online about that.
Because here's what it comes down to for me. I take it as a novelty track. It's a Beatles track, so I have to have it because I'm, you know, Beatles completist, or at least like to think I am. But I wake up in the mornings usually with a song in my head, something repeating that I've gotten into lately or have heard lately. 2 days in a row, I woke up with the melody to that song in my head. So
there you go.
It did its job. That's where I want it. You know, it's a good song. And it's cool that we have an officially presented version of it. And then knowing the story behind it, it's like, well, that's better than not having heard it at all. You know,
that's what I'm saying. There's got to just be a gratitude about it.
Yeah. Now, it's funny because there's a Jim Morrison interview that was with the Doors on PBS back in 1969 on a show called Critique.
This clip is going around.
He says the new generation's music, it will have a synthesis of these two elements, country and rock and roll, and some third thing. It might rely heavily on electronics and tapes. I can kind of envision maybe one person with a lot of machines, tapes, and electronic setups. And then further, John Wesley Harding, he has a song called When the Beatles Hit America, where he sort of wrote the history.
I remember that.
He wrote the history after the Beatles split up, you know, what the future would be like, potentially. And he's got a great line in there. And finally, they get into the studio to be co-produced by George Martin and Jeff Lynne. And Ringo's disappointed to find out that no one needs him anymore except for the vibe, because he's been sampled.
Wow.
So that's where...
A lot of this is relatively easy to predict, you know. In fact, I think, you know, there's a lot of hand-wringing about AI in general.
Yeah, yeah.
Which... I feel like being a contrarian and I don't want to add to the worry. But first of all, it's one of those things people say AI and then I ask them to be more specific, because that's a very broad term. And if you're afraid of AI well, I've got terrible news for you, but the smartphone that I'm using right now,
we've been using it forever. Voice recognition, you know, all that stuff.
All these things. I guess the worry here is that will it replace songwriters? Will it replace musicians? It will and it won't, is my guess.
Right.
Look, it's just going to be a matter of choices at some point. There are going to be some people who are going to choose to listen to AI-generated music for whatever reason. There will be others who will specifically choose to listen to music written, recorded, and performed by human beings.
That's right.
And it'll just be, I think it'll just be another genre. It'll be a novelty genre.
That's what I was wondering. Will a new genre come from all of this?
To me, if you want to talk about transparency, just call it AI whatever. And so we know, and I think that could be fun. Now, look, yes, I guess one of the worries is going to be, you know, fake recordings being passed off as yada.
Right.
But if it's, I've asked some computer people in my life, but if it's digitally created, that means it can be digitally traced.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they always say, you know, don't put that in an email or don't, you know, because it never disappears.
Right.
Well,
right.
If we care enough, we'll always crack that. But, you know, one of the good things about, and I'm not going to use AI, I'm just going to say this burgeoning technology. Let's start with the benefits, because you can use it to quickly generate new ideas or variations of ideas. Mm-hmm. And as anybody, you've written songs or if you recorded stuff, coming up with fresh ideas, it could take a long time. It can be very frustrating. There's a lot of trial and error.
A lot of roadblocks.
You lose time in doing that stuff. Now with certain software, now we can quickly, you know, the software, it can analyze, it could look at data, it could create new musical ideas or variations in seconds. Mm-hmm. Now, again, a human being, you still have the taste, like, I don't like that idea, I don't like that idea, I like this one, he's on it. But it just saved us time.
That's where the human element comes into it, because it's like, I know that's good because I like it. Whereas you could just keep refreshing until you get something that fits your feel, you know, because a lot of people have an idea about things. Now, like, as you're saying, this technology has existed in, so, like, it's on our phone, it's in GarageBand, you know, because, like, for example, when I interviewed Julianne Hatfield recently, we talked about how she recorded the album, and it was recorded remotely. She recorded stuff at her home in her bedroom and sent other stuff to a couple of the other guys in the band. They recorded at their place. But she said, I my home setup is this, this, and this. So I have GarageBand, and I like using the amp setups in there because I don't have to lug all this stuff out and get it all set up. And it sounds just fine to me. Sounds great. So that's using shortcut technology to still achieve the same idea.
She's still using her creativity, her intuition.
Yeah.
That's still there. And now let's just extrapolate this further. I think, first of all, it's all about algorithms, obviously. So
yeah,
with Apple Music and Spotify and all these, I mean, there's an algorithm to so much now. And essentially radio, even if you're using terrestrial radio stations, a lot of them, they're using algorithms as well. Okay, so that's there. Yeah. Now, it's based on a user's listening habits, but let's push this further. What if we could create custom tracks based on a listener's preferences, mm-hmm. Or their mood? How about their biometric data? Like, what if a song could adapt to your heart rate it shifts tempo based on your mood? You know, what if someone suffers from depression or anxiety but we found out there's a certain key, there's a certain tempo, there's a certain combination of instruments that works for me and gets my heart rate down and I get to get centered, almost like a mantra in a way that helps people. What if, you know, there's all sorts of, think of people who suffer from seizures. What if there was a certain tone or sound that AI can figure out that helps? So let's just think about the good things it can do. Because, you know, all the hand wringing, it's no different than the hand wringing that came out when the radio was invented.
Right.
When cassette decks were going to be the end of everything. New technology is always going to be the end of everything.
Remember auto-tune?
Auto-tune. It clearly hasn't been. It clearly hasn't been.
Right.
So, and also don't forget, we assume that because things have been a certain way for a certain while, and usually within our specific lifetimes, we assume it should always be that way, or that it is the best way. We've talked about this on our show over the years. Human beings aren't entitled to making music. If a machine can make a song via a formula, well, it's inherently going to be a formulaic song. Mm-hmm. So if you're a music creator and you're creating lame ass formulaic music, then maybe you deserve to be replaced. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Look, in fact, I was sitting, we were talking about this over lunch the other day, me and a couple of the band guys in the band. And the guys from the Black Keys, or not the guys, probably it's for the lawyers. I mean, they're going after everybody right now. Like somebody, you know, made a 48 seconds of music for placement somewhere. Whoever the client was can't afford the Black Keys song that they really want. So just give me a Black Keys sounding thing for 48 seconds. Right. They're going after all these cats, right? And it's not about the money, clearly. So it's about something else. But to me, I just thought, well, you know, if your music is, and I like the Black Keys, don't get me wrong, obviously they're fantastic, but it's like, this can be copied easily. There's a formula here.
Right.
And then while we're talking about this, the radio that was playing, you know, in the restaurant, I remember Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic came out by the Police. I'm thinking, this thing is constantly shifting keys. It has an unusual melody bass line. It's actually using a very strange mode that you rarely hear in pop music. It's like, this is not formulaic. Or if it is, the formula is much more difficult to analyze and figure out. And so I'm just saying, like, what if Taylor Swift just decides, I'm out. I can't get more famous. I can't sell more. I can't be wealthier. I'm good. I'm going to retire. I'm going to be a mom. I'm going to enjoy life. See ya. But then people was like, but yeah, but we want to hear new Taylor music. It's like, well, go ahead.
Make it.
There's plenty of data. I don't know. And maybe that comforts people. And if Taylor signs off in some way, maybe Taylor goes, well, I'll tell you what, if you're a big fan, use this software. I get a few shekels. It's based on my data.
Yeah.
Go for it. You know, I think what's interesting, Sarah Silverman, I believe, a comedian, is she's suing, I don't know if it's Chatbot or one of them, because they have a thing where it's like, create a Sarah Silverman.
Oh, yeah, like ChatGPT.
But they fed her ideas So that is a
plagiarism. They have to start from some source material. So
that'll
they analyze her work.
I'm interested in where that lawsuit goes.
Yeah, the very first thing I tried on ChatGPT was write me a Bruce Springsteen song. And sure enough, there's a mention of a car, and it was pretty blue collar, and you know, it represented the facsimile of a Bruce Springsteen song, but not the music and everything, but there's all the lyrics. Okay. And then you could take it to another bit of software and come up with the music likely. In fact, I'm going to play a couple samples here that I found online, because as you're saying, like with the Sarah Silverman thing, like this had happened with music as well, where songs were fed into a system, for example, by Nirvana, right? Kurt's vocals, lyric styles, whatever, the music, and they're all fed into this thing. And then this software was asked to create a new song from Nirvana, and this is what came out. So that one's called Drowned in the Sun, and that's basically an AI-created Nirvana track, which sounds like it could have been an outtake or a rehearsal or something that, you know, it's cloudy enough to be close to where if you're a Nirvana fan, you'd be like, that's really interesting. And here's another one that, I figured like the Doors have pretty much exploited everything in their recorded archives over the years, thanks to Ray Manzarek. And, you know, they kept everything, all the multi-tracks. They actually, for the 40th anniversary of their existence, I believe, they reissued all their albums, but with remixed versions. So you would actually hear different vocal passes or guitar licks that were on alternate takes. So you'd hear a fresh version of all these albums. So you bought them all again. I figured they'd done all that, and they released every unreleased song, and they released every live recording they had, and they're done. But this technology now could open something up, because take a listen to this. This is a song that appeared on one of the post Jim Morrison Doors albums. There were two,
right.
Other Voices and Full Circle. I believe this one is from Other Voices. There's a song, In the Eye of the Sun, which was on that album sung by Ray Manzarek. But here's what it would have sounded like with Jim Morrison if he stuck around.
In the eye of the sun, while the world has begun.
So that's pretty convincing. The second half of the song isn't as strong, but like that's a really good sample of Morrison's voice applied to Ray Manzarek singing. And if the Doors decide to pursue stuff like that, they've already got two completed albums post-Morrison that they could probably inject him into if they wanted to try stuff like that. But
here's the thing. In both those examples, though, those are bands that no longer exist.
Yeah.
Okay. So I truly don't see the harm there because, well, first of all, it's not going to be the same because, first of all, like, so let's take the Nirvana track, because it's not the early 1990s. I mean, the reason Nirvana was what it was, one of the many reasons, was just the timing, right? So not to replay the 90s and everything, but it's sort of like, you know, grunge and Nirvana, it was the death of hair metal. It replaced what was previously thought of as hard rock. It gave a new voice to a new generation of people. It you know, regarded things like anxiety and depression and very conflicted emotions, and it represented the, you know, that generation at that time.
Right, right.
And it's a different generation right now suffering from their own anxieties and their own worries. And so this is doing this with Nirvana or the Doors. Talk about a much different time in space.
Right, yeah.
It's a parlor game. It's a parlor game. So I think, what was it? The Drake one, mm-hmm, was, now that's a little more significant because he is a current artist.
This would be competing with him directly, you know?
Right.
He could still make stuff now, but now he's got to deal with stuff being created in his likeness.
No, to be fair, Drake's material is very synthesized.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not denigrating his records. He's a very successful guy. I'm just saying there's a lot of autotune there. It's not a live drummer. So it's sort of, it's my voice like, well, you're making records that sound very auto-tuned and synthesized already. So that's the type and style of production and music that's going to be easily copied by the computers.
Yeah.
So, lucky, unlucky, I don't know how else you put it, but that, you know, so, but it's going to be much harder. I mean, look, if a computer could spit out another, you know, a follow-up to Miles Davis's Kind of Blue album,
mm-hmm,
I would definitely be listening to that on a Sunday morning.
Sure. I'm open.
Because Miles, you know, Miles was an artist. He just moved on to the next thing swiftly. He would never repeat himself, really. So I was like, you know, guilty pleasure, going back in time a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I would know. In the back of my head, I would know. But that might just be our age.
Yeah, but if you can feed the curiosity, I think there's something to be said for that.
If you have the time.
Yeah.
If you have, who has the time?
And besides,
time?
Somebody has to sign off on it in the end. And not in the legal sense, but somebody has to sign off on it saying, yeah, this actually works pretty well. I'm going to share it with, you know, with people. And so it has to be deemed good by somebody at some, if it's good enough. And therefore,
because that moment happens, not to make it a complete comparison, but that happens when a songwriter writes a song before he or she plays it for another person, even one other person. There's that special moment where the songwriter is the only person who's aware of
right.
that song at that moment.
Yeah.
And the songwriter has to sign up and say, this is good enough to at least show the band. This is at least good enough to show my songwriting partner who may be able to fix it up. This is at least good enough to record into a demo, and I'm just going to put it on SoundCloud.
All right.
So a human being still makes that judgment call with what I'll call organic music. And what you're saying, that's very interesting. Someone still makes that judgment call with AI music, I suppose.
Yeah, because right? with creating, for example, this Nirvana song, somebody had to input the commands to direct this technology to create something. So that person is orchestrating the creation. And once it's created, they have to feel like, well, is this crap or not? Because, you know, there's plenty of these voice swaps on YouTube that are just terrible. Just absolutely terrible.
There's bad ones. No one ever talks about the bad ones.
The majority of them are bad because somebody just one day had a weekend free, and they said, "Oh, I got this Billy Joel voice model. I'm going to apply it to every song I remember from the '80s and '90s," and they put them all up on YouTube, and it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like maybe like an Elton John song would work better than anything else or whatever. But the McCartney ones are really good, but there's a lot of really bad ones out there. So if somebody did create like a really cool Miles Davis inspired AI track, yeah, I would probably be down for that too.
But for that example though, a lot of other jazz artists at that time and to this day are trying to do Kind of Blue.
Yeah.
So I would have to have listened to how many laid back modal jazz records before I have to turn to the computer. It's cute. It's fun. Kids, knock yourself out.
Hey, let me ask you this. Okay. You know, on, I think it's on, the expanded version of Get Happy. There was a version, might've been a demo version of Love for Tender.
That cuts off.
Do you think AI could fill in the blanks and finish the song?
Sure. Why not? Oh, by the way, I want to take this time to mention something on this podcast.
Sure.
About that Get Happy episode.
Oh yeah.
That we did.
The side pod.
Now,
yeah.
I just to refresh my memory about some things, some facts, basically about the timing of that record and the background of it. I had come across, and I remember reading the full article. I don't think I ended up using any of the information, but The Ringer, which is a great website, just a sports and culture website. Someone had written about that album. And there's a woman. She's a friend of mine now, Elizabeth.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
She wrote that article, and doing research for a lot of the Fender stuff. And she would do things for the New Yorker. Her writings are everywhere. And I use a lot of her material for the Know It All Hour. From the early episodes, I was referencing some of the things she had written about something, about an artist or a song or an album. And then the New Yorker did a little blurb about her, and I was thinking, oh. Yeah, I know her writing. She's great. Mm-hmm. And she has a band called The Paranoid Style.
Yeah, we play some of her tracks on the station, by the way.
Yeah, and she has a great Twitter feed. I still call it Twitter. Well, she'll do these really quick descriptions of an album or a song, and they're just really just devastating pieces of writing. And I noticed in this New Yorker blurb about her a couple of years ago, parenthetically it mentioned she also does side work with Fender or something like that. And I thought, well, that's odd. I wonder what she does. Anyway, I got the nerve to send a DM to her Twitter feed, just saying, I'm a big fan and saw the New Yorker blurb. Congratulations. So I'm like, I just thought, geez, I've been using this person's work. And I was so happy that they got this coverage in this magazine. So she writes back almost as she's like, Eugene, it's Elizabeth. She's been writing copy for Fender all the time. So she had been watching the Fender show.
Wow.
And had pretty much been providing material for the show kind of sideways all along.
Wow.
It was so weird. So now we're really great buddies.
Yeah.
She and her husband, they live in the North Carolina area. And so I use
a lot of her material with her permission, yeah. and she's recorded some IDs for us on the show. Mm-hmm. So I want to give a shout out to Elizabeth Paranoid Style, for those of you who want to look her up. But her work had informed our podcast in some way years ago, you know, and in a way that she probably didn't even know about, you know.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, so it's you know, the Jukebox Graduate realm, it widens, you know.
Wow, in this small world.
But I wouldn't want to paint it.
Unless it was during the pandemic and somebody needed some footage for a music video.
In which we have the time.
And yeah, and I can do that because yeah. I've got experience.
Did you use your beard as a roller?
Come on, Gene.
Okay.
All right. Well, hey, you know, right. Next thing you know, I'll be changing my name. All right. Yep. So let's, we'll get back into AI again, probably in future episodes here and there we come back, because I think it's probably going to be around for a while. So real interesting stuff.
Probably. Oh, yeah. Are we going to play another song, Dave?
We are going to play another song.
Can you say what it is?
I can tell you exactly what this is. In fact, some of you may or may not be aware of Lista Vall. It's a label that records lathe cut records for artists for special promotions. And within this last calendar year, I actually ordered one through Dan Byrne, a singer-songwriter that I've known since at least the 90s, late 90s or so. He recorded one of my favorite songs of his, a brand new version, solo acoustic, called Estelle. And this is from this lathe cut disc that Least of All just put out. Here's Estelle.
This is for Dave on the Jukebox Graduate Radio. I was painting a still life this morning of a throw lozenge and sitting on a copy of Tropic of Cancer. The only thing weird about it is that a year ago I never thought I'd paint anything again. I decided I wasn't gonna ever paint again. Didn't bother me too much. Warhol's dead, David Hockney's still alive. I don't need to paint. I painted over 10,000 paintings. Sad ones, funny ones, dark ones and light ones. I've done haystacks and rich old ladies by their pools wearing nothing but a scarf. I painted everything there was to paint. Now it's time to sit back, give interviews, hang out at Club Med, take stock of what I'd done. You know, the best friend I ever had was a dog. Sounded like a cliche unless it's happened to you. Some days that dog was the only reason I even got out of bed. The dog went everywhere with me. Then I heard that crack addicts were stealing dogs and selling them for animal research. Sounded like an urban myth to me, like the mouse in the Coke bottle. But I started leaving her at home after that. You know, Paula was my wife for a while. She ran off to Paris with the great-grandson of Van Gogh, a cartoonist who did fashion and graphics for Le Monde. You know, when Paula left, she took my dog. I never saw her again except in court during the custody battle. She won and got to keep the dog, and I didn't speak to anyone for months. You know, sometimes it feels like there's so much that you need. Sometimes the world is upside down. Sometimes it feels like the only thing you need is holding someone's hand as you walk through town. I started hanging around with Dino. He used to run a poker game back east. Now he has a little coffee shop, sells cappuccino to his old pals, Tommy Chicago, Jimmy the Wig, Ugly Rose. You know, the best person I ever knew was this Mormon woman named Estelle. She still calls me drunk every few months and asks me stuff I don't want to talk about. Can't talk to her long unless you're drunk too. Then we go all night. She goes, why, baby, why, baby, why, baby, why have you turned your back on love? You had so many chances, why have you let them all go by? Well, after a series of circumstances, chance meetings, misapprehensions, contradictions, I found myself at a canvas. She was wearing a yellow dress. I swore she'd let me, I'd get it all right. Well, I'd painted over over 10,000 paintings. Sad ones, funny ones, dark ones, live ones. And sitting there is like I couldn't even write my own name. I apologize, it's been a few months. Yeah, patience, I'll get the hang of it again. The next few weeks, I painted her hundreds of times. If I get the nose right, the chin's too long. If I get them both right, the face is too thin. But I keep after it. One day I'll get it. One day I'll get it all right. Sometimes it feels like there's so much that you need. Sometimes the world is upside down. Sometimes it feels like the only thing you need. Holding someone's hand as you walk through town.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Nelson from The Paranoid Style, and when I'm not stumbling on the side of 12 Misty Mountains, I'm listening to The Jukebox Graduate.
You know, so that was the Dan Byrne song that was cut on a lathe?
A lathe system.
Okay, which is how like a Rudy Valley record was made, right? That's how the Carter Family stuff was made in 1927.
Yeah, cut to a flat, smooth disc.
So we live in a time where we'll use AI or we'll cut something direct to a lathe.
We're not afraid to go analog.
we have choices. And I don't know, also the thing about, and then we get the ID from our friend Elizabeth from The Paranoid Style. We're talking about her songs. They're so densely written, the lyrics. There's a lot of pop references, cultural references, and it's really what hip hop artists usually do. They'll mention a TV commercial, they'll mention products, they'll mention celebrities, they'll mention things of the time, and it's funny because when a rock artist does it, it kind of gets referred to as, oh, it's too self knowing and it's too full of itself. I'm thinking, why is there an allergy to that in all other genres except for hip hop? So I like, Ben Folds will do it. Mm-hmm. I love that the Paranoid Style does that a lot in their work.
It's good stuff. I enjoy it.
Just really creative people.
And thank you for turning me on to the band. So we've got several tracks of theirs in rotation on the station right now. Yeah.
This concludes part one of this very special two-part podcast presentation of The Jukebox Graduate. See what I was saying about their rambling? It just goes on and on and on. But this is what it's like when these two get together. Good stuff all around, I might add. Anyway, you'll want to be sure to jump right into part two, where the boys get into the meat of their current pledge drive. You'll hear how the Jukebox Graduate Radio has expanded since its launch and what plans are being made for the future. Also, you will hear all about the lovely prizes they'll be giving away, including a one-of-a-kind Jukebox Graduate effects pedal, produced exclusively for the boys by Satellite Amplifiers. No purchase necessary to be eligible. Details await in part two. Now, let's flip the record over and get to it. And thanks for listening.